Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargate.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. I learned something very interesting this week. And what I learned this week was that my pain and my power come from the same place. They reside in the same place as I do.
Hey, Star.
Got it. Yes.
Okay.
All right. And the pain and the power reside in the same place, and you have to use that place to be able to switch that pain and that power. Tonight, I'm very excited to have the dynamic Tama and Keeves. Is that how you say your last name, sweetie?
That is how I say my last name, Tama Keeves.
And, wow, I looked at your website. You're bright, you're light, you're inspiring. I have one of your books sitting right here next to me. Tell me, how did all this start for you?
Well, you know, you teach what you need to learn, right?
I know that. That's why I have 440 classes.
Pretty much. So, you know, when I was younger, I knew always what I wanted to do. I wanted to write. That was my big, big dream. But I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, to an Orthodox Jewish family. And my mother said something like, "You're going to write? You're going to starve." You know, and so it was all about being very, very practical. And so I ignored what I really, really wanted to do. And I went to Harvard Law School instead. And I graduated with honors. And I was on partnership track of a major law firm. And I was so unhappy. I was just so unhappy because I knew there had to be something else. And I think so many people have that experience of finding yourself in one life when you know there's something else for you. And thank God a friend of mine said something amazing. He said, you know, think about it. If you've been this successful doing something you don't even love, what could you do with what you love? And that's what, you know, that's what lit it up for me. I just realized you get one life. I want to know where this goes. I want to know what could be. And so I left my legal career. I walked out of everything to become a writer. And that's what opened up my whole world, you know, and that's what helped me start investigating everything that's helped me stay inspired and connected. And that's how I ended up writing 3 best-selling books and teaching and becoming a seminar leader and a coach and all kinds of good stuff. So, but I'm so committed to helping other people find out what inspires them, what moves them, instead of listening to their fear.
And the fear is so there. What if I can't pay my mortgage rent? What if? And it goes on for an eternity. And you have to step through that to the place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And unfortunately, for many of us, you know, fears come and we think we're being practical. We think we're being reasonable, you know, but fear is, I think, anything that diminishes your light, anything that diminishes your potential, anything that diminishes your love. That's why, you know, that's why I wrote my latest book, A Year Without Fear, 365 Days of Magnificence.
I love it. Everyone was today. I got so irritated with people saying now, do this now. And I'm thinking, okay, well, the now's over. I won't say today. I'm so pleased with that. Well, when I read your book,
that's great.
So it's common, and people come to me and they come to you, and they say, "Am I a healer? Am I a this? Am I that?" And they know they are. They just can't leave that trap that they got, not because their heart wanted it, but because it would be able to pay all the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, 25 years later, you're going, ah!
Exactly.
You know, why aren't I alive?
Exactly.
Why am I aging?
Yes.
And people who age are the ones who are resentful. And the people
mm-hmm.
who do things they don't want to do,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe not do things, keep doing things they don't want to. There's some things I've done I didn't want to do. They, you know, jumping out of an airplane and you know, things are, and I did it once, and I said, okay, I did it. I have that experience. So how do we
I was just going to interrupt for just a second because
I
was thinking, you know, like of what I was going to say is that many of us make choices that we think are safer, that, you know, we need to be safe. But I think the greatest safety you will ever experience in this lifetime is your love and your passion and your gifts and your talents, because everybody's got a talent and everybody's got a dream and everybody's got a desire and a light in them like no other. And so if you're thinking, well, I've got to stay safe. First of all, it's not either or. It's not like if you go for your dream or you go for your passion, you can't ever, you know, you have to quit a job or you have to leave a marriage. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we all have a brilliant, brilliant inner voice, and it's about following that. And the safest thing you will ever do on this planet is doing something you care about, something you love, because that's what gives you energy. That's what gives you light. That's what gives you holiness. That's what gives you a competitive edge in the job market. That's the source of all your strength.
It is. And how do we crack people? And I mean crack that little wall that holds them into that logical, secure place. But
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have health insurance. I couldn't get my teeth fixed. You know, how do we crack people as a coach, as a teacher? Is there any two or three things that we can say or do that people get that eye-opening, light-brighting aha?
Well, you know, I think first of all, because I get asked that all the time, you know, as a career coach, you know, it's how do I get over the fear? And it's actually, it is the reason I wrote A Year Without Fear, is because so many people came to me and wanted to have this immediate change, and how do I write a book, and how do I become a healer, and how do I, you know, start my own company, and how do I, you know, do all these things. And for me, it's not so much about what we do, it's about shifting how we think. And it's not about shifting how we think for a minute. For me, inspiration takes practice. It takes every single day some small, consistent thing. And so that's why when I wrote A Year Without Fear, I realized all the clients I've had, and I've worked with so many artists and entrepreneurs and visionaries, everyone I've ever really worked with, it was just that they made small shifts over time of starting to believe in themselves more and starting to love themselves more and starting to dare. You know, like my thing is, if I can get you doing something you love right now, anything that you love right now, you're going to feel stronger. You're going to feel more powerful. You're going to feel more energized. So in A Year Without Fear, that's what I do is, you know, 365 days, every single day, I give you a slightly different way to think in love instead of fear. Because once you're in fear, it's really hard to get energized and excited and creative and pay attention to yourself and listen. And so I just want you to start your day off listening to your own inner voice and to that healer within and that love within you that can guide you every single step of the way. So I think you, quote, crack that code gradually and through love and through taking steps that are in the right direction. So again, the first thing I would always say is just do something you love, anything you love. Ride a bike, pet your dog, you know, if you like photography, take pictures. Anything you do that when you're doing something you love, you activate that energy, you change your brain chemistry, something else happens.
I think that's really important. And mine is awesomeness. I wake up in the morning and I think of this last year and the people with the cancer, the presidents of third world countries, the actors, the poor people, the street people who appeared at my door. And it's like, because I have a church in a huge building and it's open, you know, so many days
mm-hmm.
a week, I am
mm-hmm.
so awed and excited about what the universe brings me. You know, so I wake up going, wow, this is another awesome day. I I'm in wonderment of what's coming to my door today or over the phone. And for me, that's very inspiring. And, it's just gives me that.
And part of it is exactly what you just said. Because you set the tone, because you set the context, because you decided, wow, I want to focus on awesome, then awesome shows up for you. You know, and if we wake up and we think, oh, God, now what do I have to do? Oh, my God, another one of these days. Then no matter what shows up, that's the feeling we're going to have. And so I think it's so much about training your mind and training your attention and training your focus. What you focus on grows. What you focus on grows. You start focusing on desire, excitement, love, healing. You'll see more of that. You focus on, oh, I'm too old, I did it wrong, I should have done this, somebody else has it better than I do. You'll see more of that. And so for me, it's a conscious practice of focus and learning how to focus.
You know, I'm like 76 years old and still,
wow,
I can't do it all day long. I do it, I get better, I get 8 hours a day, you know, in 10 5-minute periods. And then, boom, all of a sudden something comes along and I'm not focused on the happiness or whatever it is. And it's been a practice for decades for me.
Yes.
And
yes.
I can sometimes just stay inspired and in awe for 3 days. And then some little thing happens and I have to remember to get back to my awe. Reconnect the spirit and life and my the light in my eyes and the smile on my face or my husband's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, for me, it wasn't just at all, it waved over me one day. It grew over decades to, get there. And
yes.
And people want to be a healer now, and they want to have their center now, and they want to be rich now, and the change happens in increments. The manifestation happens as it occurs. And some parts may happen faster than others. And it's really, really difficult to get to a place where what you want, you get tomorrow. What you desire, you get tomorrow. Because you have to be before something manifests.
Absolutely. It's a path of expansion, and it's a path of really healing, so like when I left law and I was writing and, you know, I wanted to be a famous speaker and I wanted to travel around the country and whatever, but I had to heal a lot of my own fears and I had to deal with a lot of my own stuff before I really had something to teach or before I was strong enough to teach, and that I was coming from the right motivation, and I was coming from the motivation of helping someone else and healing someone else rather than, wow, I just want this for me. And there's nothing wrong with wanting it for you. But I was also going to say that the other thing about, like, you know, cultivating that focus of awesomeness, sometimes we're so hard on ourselves where we think we have to be excited all the time, or we think we have to be in bliss all the time, or we think we have to be, you know, upbeat all the time. For me, some of this is about just being really kind with yourself and really gentle, because sometimes we are having a hard day and sometimes it is difficult, or sometimes I can't change my mind yet. Yeah, I know all these principles and I know I should. But for me, it's practice, and the greatest practice in this is just being kind with myself and being caring and being self-loving. And again, in a year without fear, that's really what I'm trying to get across to people, is how to every single day do you start loving yourself more and telling yourself your own stories of how you've been successful, or your own stories of what you really want, and or your own stories of forgiving yourself, you know, because again, I think we have to be trained in how to be kind to ourselves. We don't live in a culture that fosters that. So I think awesomeness also includes gentleness with ourselves.
It does, you know, and it's the ability to say, okay, it's noon, I have to put my feet up, or it's, you know, or I don't care, it's appointment number 3, I need a pillow, instead of, you know, where 10, 12 years ago was appointment number 8. And it's just to notice how I can be in the world, still functions but how my personal needs of comfort have changed over the decades. I think for 20 years I sat on the ground, you know, for in all classes and in the spaces. Then after a while I started owning chairs, or, you know, when I got my 60s, I said, can I please have a chair? It's nice for me to sit on the ground.
You deserve a chair, and now you deserve a sofa, baby.
Quite haven't earned the throne yet. Well, wait, I do have a throne, but it's not to sit on too long. Yes, and being aware that I can teach better. I am also having massive lightning and yellow sky, so if I disappear, I'll get it back quickly as I can to you. You know, to notice that, to teach better, to speak better, to heal better, that I'm needing more comforting things for me. And I said, oh my God, what would my client think? And you know what? As long as I do my job, it doesn't matter what my client thinks. You know, about
and
my chair.
And the more you're taking care of yourself, and the more that you're feeling good, you're going to have more to give. You know, I always, as a teacher, I always focus on that. Like, the more comfortable it is for me as a teacher, and the more that I'm doing what I really want in a class, the more I have to give, because then I'm in my zone, then I'm in my right energy, where I think a lot of us are always adjusting for what we think other people need or other people want, instead of what you want is taking care of yourself and listening to the spirit in you. And you do that, you'll give naturally and generously to everyone else.
And still, I think, you know, I taught my first class in 1958, and I'm going to tell you, still when I stand in front of 500 people, I still have 3 butterflies. Just the minute before I get introduced, the second before everything starts, there's 3 butterflies that do some kind of special dance in my stomach. They've never gone away, and I know they're there.
Wow.
And once I get started, everything's fine, and no matter what happens with the person who's introducing me, I'm fine. But I noticed them, and I became friends with them. Oh, I got to speak at before six people. Oh, there you were. Okay. You got about 30 seconds, you know. And to embrace those butterflies, knowing that that's part of me, you know. And
That's really very beautiful, because, you know, like, people have been asking me since, you know, I wrote a book called A Year Without Fear. People have been asking me, so does that mean you live without fear now, you know, or you have no fear? And it's like, no, that's never what it means, you know. It's that we're, like you said, we're always going to have our butterflies doing our dance. We're always going to have the place that we're expanding, the place where we're going into the unknown, the place where we're going into uncertainty, but we're learning how to do it, and we're learning to do it. Like, you know, the part of you that was strong enough or courageous enough to be a little scared, but to do it anyway, to stand there for love anyway, because so many people deny themselves the chance to have what they really want in their life because they're afraid. And I would really love to see people doing what they're meant to do.
And for some
I can't believe you taught your first class in 1958. That is amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm still teaching, you know, classes and still doing clients. And
that's amazing.
Anytime I stop, it's like I find other clients, the neighbors or somebody, you know, to work on. I think for me, another piece of how much I've grown, I remember being in Indonesia somewhere in the late 70s, and they were doing a fire walk, and they walked on fire and stuff, and I couldn't speak their language, and one of the guys got my hand and was going to take me across the fire, and I thought, oh my God, my feet are going to be charred little stumps of black. All these cripples for the rest of my life. And then I looked into his eyes, and his eyes were full of light, and I firewalked. And then years later, I marry a man who's a firewalk teacher instructor, you know, who teaches people to go to firewalk seminars. But I remember moments in my life where I I forgot that my spirit will get me through the physical as long as I'm not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And fear is a wonderful, wonderful guide to protect us. And
of course.
Your hair will stand up when there's the wrong kind of person walking behind you on a dark city night. And fear about what the children are, they, you know, your head will pop up. Are they playing ball in the street? And sure enough, you get out of your house and there are the children playing ball in the street and you pull them in. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But it is.
It's just the different kinds of fear. Like those fears are wonderful because they're your instincts and they're a form of love and they're taking care of you. But then I think a lot of us have fears that are not taking care of us. There are fears that are diminishing us. The fears, you know, that if you want to be an artist or you want to, you know, you want to ask somebody out or you want to, you know, you want to lose 10 pounds or whatever, you know, whatever your goal is or whatever your dream is of when fear, that negative self-talk says you can't have it and you screwed up in 1970, so what makes you think you can do it now and blah, blah, blah. You know, those are the fears I think that we're wanting to let go of, because I love what you said. The spirit will guide us through anything physical. We have so much capacities. We have so much abilities. And so many of us are limiting ourselves to what we think we know or what the media tells us we can have or what we've been conditioned to believe we can have when there's so much else. And there's, you know, this is the time on earth, I think, when we are waking up to those other powers.
It is exactly, you know, the little housewives in their little trailers here in Arkansas are playing for wild bees. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. You're not necessarily educated in the metaphysical and spiritual. And, you know, I run into them at the farmer's market or this and that, and they go, oh, yeah, I'm praying for world peace. And I look at them and I go, wow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at how they're getting this, you know, how they're getting it even when they're not connected to positive reinforcements. And we watch the world change like that. And I have another pet peeve that I work on with a lot of my students. And I say, what will other people think? Oh, my God, I'm going to get a stack of cash and a red Ferrari because people will think that I'm successful. And your ego is what will other people think? How will other people look at me? And the ego is the enemy of manifestation. Anything you do for what will other people think or how I will look to the neighbors, anything you work on will probably not manifest. It has to come from the love of your heart, from your love of the action, from the love of your being that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What will other people think? My parents, if I was a healer, what would they think? I've heard many times. And, you know, I've had people who parents didn't talk to their child for 10 years because she became a healer. But as soon as they got sick, who did they call? Their daughter.
And, you know, I think it's just a completely different orientation because, you know, you have the choice to, like you said, listen to your ego and to worry constantly about how do I appear in the world and what's the right way and what's the wrong way and what do other people think and are they going to judge me and all of this versus me listening to my inspired self and that presence and that love and that light. And in that moment, we're not so much thinking about what other people are going to think. We're thinking about, what can we give? What do we want to extend? What gift do we want to bring out there? You know, for me, the reason I ended up writing or teaching or coaching is because it felt so good. And when it feels so good, you know it's right. And then, you know, and I certainly had that thinking of like, oh, my God, what are people going to think? You know, I went to Harvard Law School, and now I'm leaving everything. And, you know, I'm just going to be a writer, and what if I starve? And, you know, I had all of that.
Uh-huh.
All of that constantly, you know, but when I would write, it would feel so right. It would feel like, oh, my God, I am more than myself. For this I came. I think this is what I'm supposed to do. And really what this path is what do you choose to believe in? You know, for me, it's been an every single day choice of what I choose to believe in, because I chose to keep believing, okay, I must be meant to do this. Spirit must want me to do this. Otherwise, it wouldn't feel so right. And every time I've trusted in it, you know, something has moved, something has come, and I've stepped into bigger possibilities than I could have ever made happen. And it doesn't mean I wasn't scared all along the way or freaking out all the, along the way, you know, or it doesn't mean I'm not going to be scared tomorrow, because we're always on a path of growth. That's what this is. But it's the choices you make every single moment.
You know, you have a little piece here on your website, which is www.tamakieves on trusting your inner voice. And you have many wonderful products, and also you offer free resources and consultations and stuff. Trusting your inner voice. My inner voice does not say, what will my parents think? What will the neighbor think? It says, be this. Feel this. See this. My inner voice never asks what, when, where, how, or why. And I mean, it took me like 2 decades to learn that one. And so if it starts with a question, it's not your inner voice.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Because
that's
my inner
voice won't
say, why are you doing this? It will say, do this differently.
Mm-hmm.
Choose another choice. And all of those W words, you know, except for the how, those are not my inner voice. Those are my, that's my ego speaking.
Yes.
And
yes.
For me, that was a very powerful moment in trusting my inner voice when I started learning what words my inner voice would absolutely positively not use. And then my ego would pretend to be my inner voice. I don't know if you've ever had that happen.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes. I call it your spiritual ego, where it's now all of a sudden it's like, you're not meditating enough. You're not trusting enough. And it's like, it's still, that's not your inner voice. It's your ego getting smart and putting on robes.
Uh-huh. So then your ego gets to make you feel littler, out of contact,
exactly.
Disconnected. Whatever.
And I think that, you know, one of the distinctions I use, because so many of my clients will ask me, well, how do I know which voice I'm listening to? How do I know which voice I'm hearing? And I like your distinction of if it's asking the questions. The other thing I always say is listen to the tone. Listen to the tone, because your love, that inner light, is always speaking in a very loving way. Even if you're doing something wrong, it's like you said, it might just say, oh, dear one, do this instead, right? But it's never judgmental. It's never limiting. You know, again, my ego, that voice of fear, and actually when I say the voice of fear, it is the ego, it's a certain tone. It's negating. It's cruel. It's diminishing. And so if you feel bad at any time, then you know you're listening to your fear. Because if you're listening to your soul or your spirit, you never feel bad. It's always speaking in love. Even if it's telling you to do something hard, even if it's telling you, hey, you need to forgive that person, or hey, you need to grow over here. But the tone will always tell you which voice you're listening to.
I agree. And for me, I got the words before I got the tone. So that was important.
I love the words. That's great.
Being a visionary, you know, a visionary describe a picture in 1,000 words. So I had to go that way. We're coming up in 1 second here on our commercial break.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
Oh, thank you. Now, I want to talk to you, Hannah Keyes about coaching. Most of my clients have, and listeners have studied 10, 15, 20 years already. They're working on their books. They're working on their classes. They're working on their lives. And coaching to me is always so powerful. So do you have room to take new clients right now?
I sometimes do. It just depends on, you know, where we are in our schedule. I have retreats. I have a really dynamite program called the Inspired and Unstoppable Life Tribe, and that's group coaching. So that you call in twice a month, and I do some guided processes and lectures, and then you have access to me, and I work with you on whatever's going on. And the whole point of it is to keep, because I work with so many artists and healers and creators and people who are writing books and really want to put it in the world, and my job is to keep you inspired, to keep you focused, because that's what I've done for 20 years is just that people, you know, everybody gets to the place where they believe in it and they're excited by it, and then they get scared and then they lose that connection. And so my job is to constantly keep bringing you back. And the Inspired and Unstoppable Life Tribe is amazing because it's a whole group of people who are doing this together all over the world that are just keeping each other encouraged and focused, because we're all visionaries and we're all doing different work in an amazing way. So it's a very loving experience. But I also still take private coaching clients.
And we can sign up for that somewhere on your website.
Everything is my website, tamakeeves.com. And I have a great free resource out there. If you just go to tamakeeves.com, you can download my Inspired Toolkit, and that's some really great techniques of listening to your inner voice. I'm also on Facebook every day, with a message every single day, because we have a worldwide tribe of thousands and thousands of people, and we're keeping us all together, just because I deeply believe that it takes practice to stay inspired. It really does, you know. I know when I was writing my first book, it took me 12 years to write my first book, you know, of 12 years to have the, you know, and I have so many clients that are like, oh my God, I don't have that kind of time, I can't do that. And it's like, but I always tell people, you know, I think it took me 11 years to heal and 11 years to believe in this and 11 years to trust that inner voice and 1 year to write a book. So I think when we're on creative journeys, it takes time because we're learning so much, but it's so important to stay inspired, and it's so important to stay connected to what you know and only what you know. All of my success has come, all of my worldly success has come from listening to that inner voice. It's never come from the traditional business techniques. You know, of when I started the Inspired and Unstoppable Life Tribe, I started it for that reason, because, you know, so many healers and creators and visionaries were trying to do, you know, their own workshops and do their own businesses, and then they'd get scared because they're reading all this stuff out there, you got to do this and you got to do that and you should be on Twitter and you should be doing this. And again, for me, it was never about the things you should do. It was about being moved. Like, what are you moved to do? If I can get you in touch with what moves you, what rocks your world, you'll know how to rock this world. And to me, that's the focus.
I think I compare it to nourishment, being inspired to nourishment. When I breathe, I look, feel, well, I'm visionary, of course. I look for something to inspire me, and I'll see one of my 8 or 9 books on the bookshelf and go, oh, yeah, I wrote those. And when I eat, when I sit down to eat, I think of, well, this happened today, and this person on the phone, and this person nourished me with compliments, and this person nourished me because now we have a challenge that I'm going to have to learn more to figure out. And if you can nourish yourself and have your nourishment be equal to your inspiration, that you and think about it, 8 hours sleeping. I mean, I have to nourish myself with my sleep. And when I get up in the morning, I thank my body for sleeping. And some nights it didn't sleep that much, but I still thank it. And then I go, wow, it's a new day. I'm up. I'm inspired. What can I work on today? My e-book, my big workshop. And if I look at my nourishment and I keep making my inspiration equal to my nourishment. I'm in great shape. I can walk into a room and just boom, you know. I'm a red zone speaker, so I get very animated, and I'm all over the stage, and I'm doing this and that.
You and me, sister, we would be dangerous.
We might accidentally, you know, set the room on fire or something. But I'm all over, and I'm frank, and I'm kicking butt, and I'm loving people, and you know, and that amount of inspiration can light people up. It can get that spark into a flame. It can, and I don't care what technique you do, as long as I live being inspired, and I can give that as a role model to my people, and I live a couple of other things. One of the things I live is I continually educate myself. You know, I get on the web, and I get certifications and things, and I read other people's books, lots of them. Lots of them. And I work with people, and I can be this, then anybody can be this. And that is inspiring to people.
Absolutely, and it's always about feeding that inspiration inside us. And that inspiration, again, I think, you know, like when you're tired or you're disconnected or you're in pain, you forget that you can be inspired. You forget what you can have. You know, and like one of the things that comes up in my work all the time is, you know, everybody wants the linear steps. You know, like, well, what are the 8 steps? You know, how do I make this happen? You know, how do I do this? You know, and...
I circularly teach. I teach in a spiral. There are no steps. We go around and around this till you get to the very bottom of the wave. Now let's go.
I love that, you know, because I think that when we're talking about doing inspired work in the world for real, you know, I always tell my clients, you can't plan an inspired life. You can't plan an inspired life. You can't figure it out. Your mind is not going to do this. This is going to come step by step by step. You know, again, when I wrote my very first book, I kept listening to that inner voice the whole time, and my fear voice would be like, you're crazy, and you're just writing something, and what if you never get published, and what if nothing ever happens, and all that junk. And I just kept having this feeling like, no, I think I'm supposed to do this. And when I finally finished it after 12 years, I originally self-published it. I put it in the world. I literally kept hearing this inner voice, and it just kept saying, just put it in the river. Just put it in the river. That's all it kept saying. And I knew it meant to just put it out there some way, somehow. And I put that book out into the world. I self-published it. And 4 months after I self-published it, I got an email that said, your fairy godmother has arrived. Your fairy godmother has arrived. And it was an email from a vice president of marketing and publicity for Random House. And she had somehow found my self-published book. And she wrote to me and said, this is the best book I have ever read on finding your calling and on finding your dream. I love this book. I want to get it to a major New York publisher. And she got it to the publisher I'd always dreamed of. It was Tarcher, part of Penguin. And that was, for me, such an amazing, amazing healing, because it wasn't only getting my book published, which was awesome, but it was such a validation of trusting that inner voice, because all along my inner voice had kept telling me, just do this, just take the next step, just take the next step. But it was really scary, especially because I do come from a linear culture. You know, I was trained as an attorney, you know, and so like my mind does work that way, and it was very fearful. And to see that if you trust that inner voice, your whole life will change and things will happen in this world that you couldn't possibly plan. I could never have imagined I was going to have a meltdown for 12 years writing this book, and this other woman with this, you know, publisher was going to have a meltdown and be looking for a book on a calling, and that's how we were going to hook up, and that's how I was going to get a book published. I could never have planned that, but that's why I always teach my clients, you can't plan an inspired life. You cannot plan an inspired life, but you can listen to your inner voice.
And, you know, there's so much synchronicity. I had published 100 pamphlets of The Other Side of Cancer, The Other Side of Breast Cancer, 50-page The Other Side of Brain Cancer. I was teaching in Springfield, Missouri, and I left the other side of brain cancer box behind the desk there. I called them, and they said they'd send it to me, and then they did, and then they said, oh, you know, somebody came in, and we just gave them all the books.
Oh, God.
And I was like, okay. 2 years later, a man came from South America, and he came, and he had an appointment, and in his hand was the 50-page pamphlet called The Other Side of Brain Cancer, and he says, Star, you wrote this? And I said, yes. He says, well, I want a healing. And then another year or so later, somebody else, and they always brought the book in hand. They never said to me, oh, I read the book. And it was, you know, it was self-printed. It was 82 or something, you know, like that. And it was just amazing. And I have a story where one of my best clients, she was at a center, and she looked in the trash, and somebody had thrown my brochure in the trash, but it wasn't in any of the brochure holders. She pulled it out of the trash and spent 10 years learning with me.
Spirit will do crazy
things to make sure that you and the people who you're supposed to be with.
I love that. It's such a great story because it's so true. You will always meet who you need to meet. You will always meet who you need to meet. And those are just such great examples that there is an intelligence in this universe. There is something else going on. But again, I don't think we align to it. I don't think we connect with it if we're not following our love. You know, if you wouldn't have printed those pamphlets to begin with, if you wouldn't have followed your light, if you wouldn't have followed what you knew,
have given them away.
Exactly.
You know, they wouldn't travel the way they would have traveled. And another example I have of spirit being really smart is in the old days. In the old days, you actually had to hand address an envelope, stamp an envelope, put a return.
Yep.
And then put the brochure in the envelope and set it out. And I was doing a speaker's training, and we had just spent the whole day doing a mailing, 1,000 envelopes with stamps and everything. So we went to bed. Then I got up in the morning, and my husband was going to take it to the post office. And the secretary kept answering the phone, and things were going along, and I was working with somebody came. I worked with him. By 4 o'clock that day, we had filled every spot of that speaker's training, and the mail from the one-line advertisement on my calendar and the brochures were still sitting on the table. And like 5 of us had spent all day doing that and you know, getting it out. And you know how you have, you know, January 14th speaker's training till January 28th or whatever it was. That was on my calendar, and that filled in one day. And I went, I wonder if we would have ever done that, if put that much energy in it, if it would have happened. And my spirit guide said, no, you have to put much energy into it. And so you just got to sit back and go, wow, when things like that happen.
And it's always about following, you know, and that's again why I'm so, you know, what infinitely fascinates me is these kinds of stories that we all have of that when we do follow that light inside us, when we do follow that natural intelligence inside us. Everybody's got these capacities. Everybody has something miraculous within them. Everybody has a gift. Everybody has a genius. I want to see where that goes. You know, I want to see, you know, what this world could be if every one of us was giving our gifts. You know, like even in my own life, it's like I did not do this so that I could be helping other people and be a career visionary and be, you know, at all these retreat centers or anything like that. I was just trying to save my own life. I wasn't doing anything. It was just that I was so unhappy that I just knew, oh, my God, there has to be another way. I've got to find another way. And so that's all I was trying to do was answer my own pain. And in doing that, that's what, you know, inspired me writing, and that's what inspired me to speak and teach. But I think everybody's got that. And I think sometimes your pain is a source of inspiration or is a source of something you have to give us, something, you know, like wherever you're healing something, that's what you have to give us. And I think people forget how many gifts they have and how much talent they have and how much they're needed.
Yes, and how much they need themselves to stay positive, to stay appropriate, and how well that even on your own you can do. How wonderful it is to have relationships and a significant other. And there are times this lifetime I didn't have that, and how well I did.
Mm-hmm.
And to focus on that instead of, you know, the miserable days. So life is really, really important. You have to pay attention and intention to it. And most importantly, I find that I need confirmation. You know, I've been doing this for years and years, and I have a coach in California that every once in a while when I get stuck with one of my books or I get stuck with something in my life that I call. You know, I have another 5 or 6 people that I actually pay to help me
mm-hmm.
in different ways. And it's really important to realize that I can see everybody else's stuff, but hey, we're going to see my stuff. I might as well just, you know, hit my hand on my forehead and said, geez, I should have had another reader, you know.
mm-hmm.
And it's important to get confirmation, to get that outside wisdom. And playing with people like you and playing with
mm-hmm.
like me is mm-hmm. what that faceted diamond, that's what makes those sides shiny, and that's what makes you sparkle and glow a little bit more. We're never, ever going to be able to make you into a diamond because you already are. But
mm-hmm.
we should definitely show you ways to reflect light. We can give you so many maps.
And it just saves so much time. It just saves so much time. I mean, I can't tell you how much time I've wasted in my own head, you know, like just, you know, trying to, am I okay, should I do that? I mean, you know, like just, you know, all this stuff in it. And so sometimes I always tell my clients, read a book, buy somebody's product, you know, hire somebody as a coach or a reader or whatever, because we're borrowing their inspiration in the moment. We are leaning on their strength in the moment to reignite ours, because when I'm in my right mind, when I'm in my inspired mind, I know what to do. I know where to go. I know what, you know, I'm aligned and things are happening. And so I agree with you. I don't think we're meant to do it all on our own. You know, that's why in all of my books, you know, that's what I wanted to do, was just lovingly and gradually coach you, you know, so that, you know, even if you couldn't hire somebody, you could buy a book, you could, you know, you could listen to something and be inspired that way, because I think each of us has that inspiration in us, but we just need to be ignited by others who are in the strength, because we will always go, we will always be in fear, and then we'll be in love. We'll be in fear, and then we'll be in love. It's always that choice. And so value your mindset. Value your inspiration. Value the practice. Value polishing it. You know, I sometimes people come to my workshops, and they'll be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm taking another workshop. I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe. But it's like, why wouldn't we be doing it? Our mind is our most important vehicle. Our mind is our most important asset. Why wouldn't you be training it? Why wouldn't you be going to another workshop or buying a book or hiring somebody? It's your whole life comes from the way that you think, and you have so many more powers than you know.
Exactly. I mean, I went to Beverly Hills, and I took voice lessons. Not that I'm a singer, but if you think about my life, 8 hours a day with appointments and then teaching a class
mm-hmm.
at night, and I went to this very famous voice teacher, and I spent some time with him, and I found out that many, many little things that I didn't know about the energy of the voice, and cleared many things, because this is my tool.
Mm-hmm.
This is my tool. And the other thing that I'm very adamant about is parents. and parents say to come to me and say, oh, my God, I have to tutor my child in math. And I said, well, what's he good at? And they said, well, he's an artist or he's good at Legos. They says, you get a tutor for math and you get a tutor for art. They go, what? I says, listen, you tutor your children in their strengths and you tutor their children in their weaknesses. Oh, well, she likes horses. Well, get her horseback riding lesson. Well, not if she doesn't do her math. I said, get her both, because then they'll realize that there's, you know, you can do well in things and be tutored with them as well as do need a little bit of help.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I fought, you know, especially the parents who could afford it, and I fought tooth and nail for that, and then it just took off, and it's going around now as one of those things. Well, if you tutor a child in math or English, you need to tutor them. I think it's really important that if I buy 5 books on how to restructure my mindset, then I want to buy 5 books on something I like to do, like cooking or channeling, or you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. It's in educating myself. I need to educate the shiny parts as well.
Yes, yes.
And people don't get that, and they go, I don't have $1 million. So all they do is learn about creating, manifesting cash. And then mm-hmm. they have to learn about what's in their way for creating manifestation cash. And they seem to skip over what their assets or attributes are.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if your child gets tutored, there's 2 tutors. and people look at me and go, the money, the this, the that. And I mean, it's like a child goes, okay, you need help in math and you're good in art. Okay, we're going to give you some more help in art. And it just,
and especially,
it's miraculous to see those children.
Especially because there's such a cultural bias to think that certain things are more practical or rational, and that, you know, helping your child explore their artist side or their intuitive side, that doesn't count as much. And I think, you know, what you're talking about is feeding your strength, is feeding what's natural, is feeding your inclination. And I see it in adults, too, of that. So many people have these dreams and desires, but they think, oh, well, that's silly or that's frivolous or I can never get paid for that. And it's like, that's where I want you to go. Wherever your energy is, that's where I want you to go. Wherever your energy is, wherever the heat is for you, that is what's most practical for you. Because to me, it's impractical to ignore your strengths, and that's what you're talking about. And I think our world is changing and shifting. And again, there's been a bias to only linear strengths and practical and rational. And again, I think we need to be really delving into inspired thinking and creative thinking, because those are resources that we haven't even tapped yet. And, you know, we think there's finite resources on the planet, but there's infinite resources in our mind, infinite resources in how we think. And so, again, I'm always telling people, feed your strengths. And if you think your dream or desire is frivolous, it's not. It's imperative. We need it, and you need it. You are not going to be okay or feel good if you're not doing what you love.
I had a dream, and I met the aliens, and the aliens were 4 or 5 races, and they had just come to Earth, and I'm sitting there talking to them, and I said to the aliens, and what is the thing you think that your population on your planet will buy the most of from Earth? And they looked at me kind of funny, and they say, well, we'll buy your arts and crafts, because
wow.
they're made by your true nature and by the hands of humans. And I went, wow, when the aliens get here, our product is going to be birdhouses, paintings, pottery, you know. And I thought, wow, isn't that just so interesting, you know? Oh, we want opals or diamonds or we want cats. No, they want to buy our arts and crafts. I just thought, wow, Star, your dreaming is so on. Because they love that energy that everybody puts into making things.
Mm-hmm, because,
so
like you said, it's true nature.
What's your next big seminar? Where are you going to be, sweetie?
What's my next big seminar? That's a good question. Actually, I'm doing a virtual seminar right now on A Course in Miracles, if anybody's ever wanted to study A Course in Miracles of Living in Love Instead of Fear. I'm doing it here in Denver, but there's also a virtual course that I'm offering where you can join us for 8 weeks. I am going to be leading a retreat at Omega in New York. That'll be in July. It's a weekend in upstate New York, and it's amazing, and it's all about creating the work you love. I have all kinds of things going on. They're all on my calendar on the website.
I studied there for a long time. I spent a couple of years studying there and teaching there.
Oh, I
love
really Esalen.
I really liked Joseph Campbell at that point in time. So
I love Esalen. Yes, I'll be at Esalen in September. And, oh, my God, that's an amazing retreat if you can join me. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's today, too. Do you have any longer retreats?
I do, actually. I offer a four-day retreat or a five-day retreat at Kripalu, which is in Massachusetts during leaf-changing season. And, oh, my God, that's so amazing because we really go deep. And all of my retreats are called Unleash Your Calling, Create the Work and Life You Love. And it's really all about listening to this inner voice, and it's really about taking it into the world, and it's about writing your books and putting your workshops in the world, but it's mostly about really listening to that love inside you instead of fear.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Now, a little bit more about you. Are you married? Do you have children? We just found out you live in Denver. Tell us a little bit more personal stuff about you.
Personal stuff about me. Let's see. I've lived with a partner for 20 years, and he's joined me in this endeavor. This is my life's mission. This is all I do is speak and teach and write and travel. I'm from New York City originally, and I live in Denver now and love it out here. It's just beautiful, the sun and the mountains. I don't have children. I have a great dog who's one of the loves of my life. And I just love meeting all the incredible people I get to meet in this work. I mean, for me, the joy and the passion is I have seen so many people shift their lives and really change their lives doing this work, and it just blows me away.
Well, I have a beautiful 6,000-round-foot dome here in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and we'll see if we can get you to come up next year sometime and teach a workshop here.
Ooh, that'd be wonderful.
Wonderful.
A golden dome.
Yep, a dome with all the crystals and the hot spring water here.
Ah.
Wonderful place for people to come. And is there any last thing you want to say to inspire people out there before we end our show?
Sure, absolutely. My heart rate now is in this new book, A Year Without Fear, 365 Days of Magnificence. I guess I just want people to know that it really is a practice, and that there is so much love inside you. And if you spend every day, you know, the thing about A Year Without Fear is it's literally a 5-minute mindset shift. It's literally just reading something that starts tuning you into listening to your own original instincts and your own original genius and how to love yourself more and how to love others more. Because the thing I most wanted people to know is that the inspired presence within you can accomplish anything at any time. And it's really about feeding that inspired presence because, again, we don't get those messages enough in the world and in the media, but we need to train ourselves to do that. So, and also, I'd love, 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 love people to join me out on Facebook or to come to the website, tamakeeves.com. T-A-M as in Michael, A-K-I-E-V as in Victor, E-S as in Sam.com. Please join our tribe. And like I said, we have an inspired toolkit you can download right away. There's just so many amazing things going on. And I just want people to know that they have so much more power than they know. And it's really about practicing listening to it.
Well, thank you, sweetie. And listen, people, Inner Child Workshop next week, to Healing Circles online, 1 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon for my people in the Far East, and 1 at 11 o'clock in the morning for my people here and in Europe. We'll be teaching sacred geometry in June, and our favorite month-long workshop is coming up September 7th to September 8th, Dimensional Mastery. Peek on my websites for fun little games and charts, for a bunch of interesting audios and visuals, and most importantly, educate,